Blog Talk Radio.
Who are the unstoppable ones?
Is it just that they can do it and I can't?
Who are the unstoppable ones?
Is it just that they can do it and I can't? Mission Unstoppable. Mission Unstoppable.
The unstoppable ones.
You did say unstoppable, right? You did say unstoppable, right? What is it they know that I don't? Coach Frankie Picasso takes you on Mission Unstoppable.
Who are the unstoppable ones?
Can anyone stop these people?
Good evening. I am the unstoppable Frankie Picasso, and tonight you are about to go on another Mission Unstoppable. Our guides this evening will literally take us into hell and show us how to live there. Most of us live in a relatively pain-free world. You can move and dance and bend over, put your clothes on without thinking too much about how it hurts. However, there's a large sector of society that doesn't have that luxury. And yes, it is a luxury. Living with constant gnawing pain is enough to drive someone to kill themselves, or at the very least, be in a really bad mood all the time. But my guest this evening is going to show you how to win at the pain game and live a winning life. So stay tuned and stay close. This is the Unstoppable Frankie Picasso. If you're listening to us on Tuesday, March the 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern, then you have tuned in to the live version of Mission Unstoppable. And you're free to participate by calling into the show at 646-595-3741. Also, please join us in the chat room, which is now open. I'm sorry if I kicked anybody out. I refreshed that page. Please come back in. And if you are listening to the archive version, thank you for downloading. And feel free to contact me if you need more information about me or any of my guests at frankie@missionunstoppable.com. I'd like to take a moment here to thank the good folks here at Blog Talk Radio for allowing me to broadcast over their network. And I especially like to thank you, you know who you are, for tuning in each and every week. My guest this evening is Coach Marla Martindale. She's a Texas mom, a wife, a grandmother, a radio host, a blogger, and a dog lover. She's self-described as a simple lady, yet there is nothing simple about her. She's living life with four known afflictions: full body reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or RSD, also known as complex regional pain syndrome. She also has osteoporosis, fibromyalgia, and MS. And apparently another affliction as yet of unknown determination. She's the first known RSD coach known in the world, and she's extraordinary in her output of information and support for those folks who also suffer with RSD, as well as those who live with chronic pain conditions of any kind. I think she's courageous beyond belief, living with grace and humor, and I think you'll agree with me. Please welcome Coach Marla. Hi, Marla.
Hi, Frankie. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Question is, how are you doing?
Girl, I am blessed.
Yeah, you keep telling me that, and I think it's just great. Marla, you know, there's about 8 million people who suffer from RSD, as far as I know, in North America anyway, and your goal is to reach all of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I was telling somebody earlier, fibromyalgia didn't get their commercial for many, many years after they started diagnosing people with it. So my big push now is I want RSD to have their commercial, not for the product of what can help you get through it, but for the awareness of it.
Right. And so maybe we better tell folks, what is it? What is this RSD, and how do you get it, and how do you stop yourself from getting it?
Well, really, there's no real way to stop yourself from getting it. Anybody's susceptible to getting it. Mm-hmm. I got it from breaking my ankle. I've had clients that have stubbed their toes and have gotten it. There's one lady who a dog was sleeping on their ankle and RSD set in. There's real no known way to get it. I mean, there's research going on about possibility of being a hereditary thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's still in the research mode and no one really can say one way or the other for sure. But everybody is susceptible in various different ways.
Wow. So the question is, why is it so misdiagnosed or so missed by so many doctors? It seems when I look at the pictures that you have on your website of, mm-hmm. of folks who have it, the look of the skin, the way that they describe the pain, it seems like this is something that doctors should know about, and yet it's really misdiagnosed.
It's very misdiagnosed, and it's been around since, like, the Civil War, if not before. They've traced it back to then. But yeah, even Howard Hughes, if he would have been properly diagnosed, he would have been diagnosed with RSD simply because he was in severe pain. He couldn't clip his fingernails. It hurt. He couldn't clip his toenails. It hurt. He couldn't take a bath. It hurts. Didn't want to cut your hair. It hurts. Don't want to brush your teeth. It hurts. You don't want
anybody people might laugh and say, you know, your hair hurts. But I have been, you know, at a time and place where my hair hurts. It hurts. Touch it. Yeah. It's
exactly.
Amazing.
You don't want to touch your eyes. You don't want anybody to get near you. The slightest breeze can send you into a state of sheer panic.
Wow. Now, you've described it that it feels like barbed wire is wrapped around your body.
Yes. Yes. If you can imagine that, you know, the razor barbed wire that's on the top of, like, the prisons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, the big ones.
The big ones.
The big ones.
They're all wrapped around. And then coming through the barbed wire is swords trying to, you know, go from one side of you to the other side. And at the same time, you're being electrocuted from the inside out. And every step you take is like stepping on a bed of hot coals and needles and nails that are very, very rusty and trying to dig through. I know it sounds very, very horrible, but if you learn the system that I had to go through to get there, I don't want to say it's easy because it's not easy.
Pain's not easy. But you can learn to deal with it. You know, it was, I don't know if I saw it on your site or another site, but it was said that cancer patients are asked to rate their pain on a scale of 1 to 10. And anybody who deals with chronic pain or fibromyalgia or any of those diseases, you know, you'll go to a doctor and say, so what is your pain running at today? And you go, well, I don't know, 8, 7, whatever it is that you want to, you know, number you give to it. Cancer patients usually say it's around 22.
Yeah.
RSD patients say it's around 40 something.
Exactly.
That is like just unbelievable, off the charts.
Totally. And if you look at the McGill pain scale, RSD is more painful than any cancer, bone cancer, or any of anything, and amputation of a limb without any anesthesia.
Wow. Now, I was reading about one guy who, you know, all he dreamed about was getting rid of his limb because he thought it would help get rid of the pain.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not going to.
It's
not going to.
Exactly.
But,
that's what you want. You know, you just want to get as far away from it as you possibly can, and that's just very impossible, you know, but.
Marla, does it ebb and flow? Do you have good days, bad days, days when it's not so bad, hours?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say it's all a bed of roses because, you know, I have my pity party too, but sometimes I don't send out invitations.
Well, you can't because, you know, you wouldn't have any friends left. If you...
Nobody wants... find out who your friends are.
Yeah, you sure do. You sure do. You don't want to be a martyr because, you know, that's not a really great place to come from.
No.
But you've found some strategies that help you deal with it. But let's just talk about, you know, in the beginning when you first had it and you had the cast taken off. And, of course, it's, you know, your leg always feels a bit weak and funny because you've had a cast on it for a while. And so what happened when they told you, okay, you can walk out now. You can leave. See you later.
Yeah, right. Well, right before that, the doctor was showing me the little exercises I need to do because, you know, I'd been in a cast and you know, you got to work those muscles because I'd been, you know, just hanging out and not being used. And he kind of like pushed like right by where like a bunion would be. He pushed right there and was kind of twisting it and went, hey, you about made me wet myself. And he jokingly said, oh, clean up on aisle 9. But see, that should have been a first clue.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. So, and with my personality, everybody jokes with me. So that's okay.
Right.
But sometimes.
Right. Yeah. They don't think you're in pain because you're presenting, you know, you look good, your hair's done, you've still got some makeup on, you're laughing,
exactly.
You're smiling. And the same thing happened with me. And they would say, well, you don't have pain. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. You know, this is a mask. This is so that you can look in a mirror and not want to kill yourself. Because if you looked on the outside like you felt on the inside, you wouldn't be able to do this.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be able to host your show or talk to people or, you know, you're your mom and a grandmother and a wife, and you've got duties that you perform at home, and, yeah, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Exactly. And that's life, you know. I'm not about to let anything destroy me having a life.
Right. We got a caller. We got a couple callers, okay. But let's take one. Let's see.
Okay.
What we got here? Area 508. Hi. Welcome. This is Frankie.
Hello. This is Raul.
Hello, Raul.
How are you?
How are you? I was wondering, why does this woman, Marla, why do you wrap yourself in the barbed wire and step on nails? I don't understand.
No. I don't do it. It's just the RSD makes you feel as if you are wrapped in barbed wires and jumping on nails, actually. But, yeah,
oh.
I just make you feel that way.
She has a disease that makes her feel like that.
Oh,
that's how painful it is.
Oh, wow. You know, this is Marla's co-host, Chris.
I thought that voice sounded familiar.
Oh, you're so funny.
Well,
hi, Chris.
You know,
how are you feeling?
Marla, I'm feeling great. Marla has a great sense of humor. For all this pain, every time I hear it, I can't believe the amount of pain that she can be dealing with on a daily basis. And when you're talking about somebody wanting to amputate their arm because the pain is so bad, and even, Marla, when you used to talk about knives going through you and come up, I don't know how you can deal. I mean, I deal with some crap, but I don't know how you can deal with that kind of pain.
Yeah, Chris lives with MS. So he knows about pain,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little bit. But yeah, you've got some layers on you, Marla.
Yeah.
I know. We get together on Tuesday to do a show, and she's so happy and bubbly, and you know, I know she's not having good days all the time.
Right.
No.
You know when she's not having a good day without her saying anything?
No.
Can you tell by her voice, Chris?
No way.
No way. Okay. I am always. And I always have been a really positive individual and a very happy-go-lucky person. When I was first diagnosed with RSD and found out exactly what it was all about, I wanted to go and play on the highway numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all shiny and, you know, roses and light fluffy clouds, you know. There was a
right.
lot of crying and you know, researching and stuff. But
now, did you ever say, why me? I mean, here I am. I'm a happy person. Why would I get this?
You know? There was a couple of times that I did, but I won't say more than that because the first time I said, why me, I kind of sat back and went, what did I just say? I'm like questioning God's authority here.
Right.
And then
why not you?
And then the second time I asked why me was when all of the other diagnoses came along. And then I went, I am never going to question it again.
Isn't it awful how you keep getting layers and stuff? Okay, so Mary Sunshine's in our chat room, and you can see her, but she wants to know, how were you finally diagnosed?
About a week after my cast came off. Right after the cast came off and I went back to work because, you know, I had to use the crutches out. He said I'd be able to walk out, but I couldn't. So I was standing there, and I worked at the hospital with the attorneys, and I'm standing there, and I put my foot down and let it dangle, you know, I was tired of holding it up. And one of the ladies said, oh, my God, your foot. And it looked like it was a cadaver foot. It was just the ugliest color I've ever seen. And I was like, wow, I had never broke anything. I didn't know if that was a normal thing or not, you know.
Right,
so
yeah.
I just, you know, went, oh, I don't know. So I put my foot back up and went back to my desk, and I propped my foot up on my desk. And, yeah, it hurt, but I thought that was a normal thing, you know. It didn't ring any bells or anything. And about a week
later. Were you taking
later,
painkillers at the time?
No,
Nothing.
No,
wow.
Nothing. About the next week. It was just too much. I couldn't take it. And so I called the doctor and talked to the nurse and told her, and she said, oh, you need to come in right now. And it was only a couple of blocks away from where I worked, as you can imagine, a medical community. And so I went over there, and the doctor walked in, and he took one look at it, and he sent me back for x-rays because that's one of the ways that they can tell.
Okay.
And he came back in, and he said, you have RSD, or reflex sympathetic dystrophy. And I tell you what, when he hit that word dystrophy.
Dystrophy,
yeah. I heard nothing else. Everything else was wah, 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 like the teacher of Charlie Brown, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh my God, I got to go see Jerry Lewis. I had no clue.
Yeah.
Oh
my
God.
He was going to refer me to another doctor that could, you know, help me better. And I said, well, what do I do in the meantime? And his last words were, don't give in to it. Well, you know, at the time, I didn't know what he meant. Mm-hmm. At the time, I thought it was really brass of him to say such a thing.
Well, it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
It kind
so,
of is.
You know, I
first
just
of all, you know, everybody has a different pain threshold,
mm-hmm.
right? But at the same, like, don't give in to it. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's kind of like, what, don't give in to my pain? I'm like, I'm in major pain.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, what do you mean, don't give in to it? But he had left the room. So then I go back to work, and all the ladies were, what'd he say? And I told him, you know, his last comment was, don't give in to it. And they went, what? Oh,
did he
no,
give you anything
we're in a
pain
hospital.
Medication then? Did he give you anything?
No, nothing. Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Wow.
Absolutely nothing. And so being in a hospital, we had access to, you know, a lot of information. So we looked mm-hmm. up RSD or reflex sympathetic dystrophy. Since I only heard dystrophy,
mm-hmm. yeah.
it went no further. And you talk about being scared. You know, you read all of this and it's all negative.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my
God. No goodness. Cure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Doesn't get better.
Exactly. You know, and it describes the amount of pain that you're going to be in for the rest of your life.
Right.
And, you know, you're like, there's
oh
no way.
God.
You know, there's
yeah.
no way.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you can buy into that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in a way he meant that, you know, the doctor, you can buy into that, that, oh, I'm going to be in pain, so I will be.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can, you know, take a different perspective and a different approach and say, okay, well, I'm going to keep it as white noise. I'm not going to, you know, that's what I try to do. Don't tune it in. Keep it in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, every time you go to a doctor, okay, what is your pain level at today? It's like, mm-hmm. no, I don't want to tune it in. Like, because that's mm-hmm. just going to hurt. You know?
Exactly.
Let's just keep it in the background and just know I got pain. I know I have it. Mm-hmm. And until it really gnaws at you and wakes you, you know, over the head and says, okay, you know what, you can't ignore me anymore. That's kind of how you have to live your day, don't you think?
Yeah, well, to a degree, yeah. I consider myself to be the local Rent-A-Center for diseases and diagnoses,
mm-hmm.
since I have so many.
Yeah.
So
how do you coach people on it? What do you tell them?
I just tell them that I put them behind locked door, and I allow them to rent me occasionally. I'll give them their space. I'll
mm-hmm.
take the time that it takes for my body to experience everything, and then I take it away from them because they're not going to own me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll put them back under lock and key, and I'll go in and visit every once in a while just a little bit, just to let them know that it's okay. You know, and it's kind of like a mind game with it all, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I used to push it around my body, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Isn't
yeah.
that cool?
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of cool. People, if you haven't had it, or if you do get pain and you're in pain, you know, try it. Just try to visualize that pain and as an entity
mm-hmm.
and start pushing it around.
Exactly.
It kind of feels good.
It does. And it's amazing what your mind can allow your body to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do and not do. It's an amazing, amazing thing that we have here, and it's a definite gift. And all of my diagnoses I consider to be gifts. I've learned from each and every one of them an absorbent, I mean, just like astronomical amount of information from each and every one of them that I would have never, ever, ever considered even thinking about, let alone being that experienced in.
I know that you have a great faith in God.
Yes.
And so I'm going to assume that you believe that you wouldn't be given any of this if you couldn't bear it.
Exactly. I believe that God doesn't give you anything that you can't handle. And
okay.
He created me because he knew that I could handle it. So there's something I'm supposed to do.
There's something you're supposed to do with it other than just live with it.
Exactly, and that is to be the coach. There has never, ever been an RSD coach. There's been a lot of, like, what do I want to say? Not moderators, but mediators type,
right.
You know, like support groups and things of that nature, which are wonderful, and I'll take nothing out of that. That's a wonderful step. But
right.
There's never been anybody to make that commitment to actually try to help everyone. And that means you have to listen to their pain and deal with your pain and help them deal with their pain.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So what tips and tricks do you have for getting out of pain?
The famous one that I really, really like is visualization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have the perfect happy place that I can just, you know, soar off to whenever I want. I can create little things to go into my little happy place and make it even prettier. Or I can cut down some trees, meaning I get rid of a few little stress modes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just kind of keep it on ice. And of course, every coach has a coach.
Right.
You know? So my coach helps me with living like, not like, well, she's a life coach. So she basically helps me with the life decisions as far as, well, do you think you could do this or do you think you can do this? Well, you know what a life coach does.
Sure.
So she's helping me with that, and that's great, but she doesn't know RSD. She doesn't know, you know, that far
right.
into chronic pains and stuff, so she doesn't really know how to go that way either. So, but visualization can take you so many different places and can create so many different wonderful things that you never even thought you could possibly dream of, let alone think of.
You know, one of the things I found for me is if you do something that you really love to do, let's say paint or do a puzzle or
mm-hmm.
write, something that really, like your visualization, that takes you away from the reality, let's say.
Yes,
it gets you so deep that, you know, if you can read a book without, you know, while a TV is on, that kind of
mm-hmm.
concentration, that you don't feel your pain anymore. It's
right.
gone. You forget. You forget about it for a while.
Yep. You sure do.
The reality comes
by. One of the things I really, really like to do is help people, because once you start helping people,
mm-hmm.
you get a gift along the way as well.
Yeah.
Because you learn from them, and they are learning from you, and that's an experience that can never, ever, ever take anything away from anybody. It's an amazing thing.
You have a radio show with Chris, and Chris, I'm sorry, I put you back on hold.
Yay!
You can't say anything. Sorry, no. But you, tell us about your radio show and when you host it.
Okay. The name of the show is Winning Life Through Pain. And we're on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock Central, 2 o'clock Eastern. And we have a lot of different guests that come on and talk about their own chronic pain, or experts that can share how people can, you know, get some relief with different things, and raw eating, healthy foods, dieting, exercise, just all sorts of things we have in there. It's really a fun show. We have a lot of fun.
And what's the website for your website?
It's here on Blog Talk, or you can just go to rsdcoachlive.com.
Okay, great. And you are currently writing a book.
I am.
Yeah.
I wish it were done.
Yeah. Yes, her show is on Blog Talk, Mary.
Oh. I was like,
Your show is called Winning
Life Through Pain.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There we go. Yeah, I wish your book was done too. Let's meet Melissa. I'm going to bring Melissa on because I think you guys have a lot to share.
Okay.
One another. Melissa Bales is a very courageous, I think, 28-year-old woman who was diagnosed 15 years ago with reflex sympathetic dystrophy. With the odds stacked against her, she overcame her condition to graduate from Furman University with 2 degrees. She became a television news producer, even winning a Southeastern Regional Emmy Award. And she currently works in public relations at the Shriners Hospital for Children in Greenville, where she was formerly a patient. So please welcome Melissa. Melissa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Congratulations. You have done so well.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
So how did you do it? You were, about 13 years old when you were diagnosed?
I was. I was diagnosed at 13 years old after having several surgeries on my ankle.
Did you break your ankle, Melissa?
No, I was actually born with a birth defect in my ankle, and I had about 8 surgeries.
Oh.
Okay.
And so the surgeries and the casting and those things eventually led me to develop RSD.
Wow.
Did you?
And is yours full body as well, or is it?
It originally started off in my ankle, and it started moving up my leg, so it's now consumed my whole left leg.
Wow. And is your leg, like, a different color and shiny, or?
It does. It's shiny, and it started turning blue when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first sign.
Isn't that the color?
It is very weird. At first, it was, like, where my sock was, so I thought maybe my sock had died off on it.
Uh-huh.
But after it happened for a few times, I realized that couldn't be it.
That's so funny because my mom thought I had on a sock.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a very odd color. It looks almost like something has died off onto your skin.
Yeah.
Can you walk on it or no?
I can. Mm-hmm. I can most of the time. Occasionally I have to use a brace, or occasionally the pain's so bad I use crutches. But for the most part, I walk. And I've also been lucky enough, after years and years of trying different treatments, I have found one that kind of helps me, sympathetic blocks.
Mm-hmm.
They help control my pain somewhat.
Now,
so
Marley, you had something inserted, right?
Right. I have a spinal cord stimulator inserted.
Yes.
And so have you heard of that, Melissa?
I have. I've actually been thinking about getting one. But since
let's
I'm
hear
so
Marley's
young,
experience.
Yeah.
You said you're too young?
Well, I was too young at first, but now that I'm older,
okay.
I'm considering it more.
Yeah.
But I'm
Does
still
it have
not
to be
sure
replaced?
I'm ready to go that far.
Well, you know, I tell you, after I got my spinal cord stimulator was the first time I'd really been able to determine what pain was being caused by what diagnosis.
Really?
Ever since being diagnosed with everything, it just kind of all was in a melding pot. And it was hard to determine, well, is this RSD pain? Is this fibro? Is this osteo? You know, what is this? You know?
I can completely relate.
And the new thing that they're trying to figure out, they're thinking I may have possible cataplexy, which, you know, I don't know if y'all have heard of cataplexy
no.
or not. I hadn't. But you know the goats that faint?
Yeah.
That's
cataplexy. I do know those goats that faint.
That's cataplexy.
Oh,
wow.
So you get scared and you faint?
No, I'll just be walking along and fall out.
Oh, my gosh.
Just fall out. But I don't pass out. I just laugh hysterically.
Oh, my gosh. That is funny. There's a picture of me holding one of those goats.
Really? Oh, how funny.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah. Well, I must be related to them in some form or fashion. I don't know how, but.
That is so bizarre. Wow.
Yeah.
So how would the stimulator allow you to distinguish the pains, because the RSD pain is in the ankle, or how would you know the difference?
No, the difference in the pains is fibromyalgia is mostly the joint kind of muscle pain.
Right.
And it has different zones that are just like 11 different zones that it goes to. So you get to know that is what's causing that pain.
Right.
The RSD is causing the fire, the needles, the swords, the barbed wire, the excruciating, almost non-tolerable pain. And the osteo is causing, like, the back pain, lower back especially.
Mm-hmm.
And then the osteoarthritis is both knees. Of course, that's easy to determine. And then the cataplexy, of course, you don't really have pain. You just kind of fall out.
You just fall out. But Melissa, you described your pain as like a hot poker, I think, didn't you?
Oh, yes. But I do think the barbed wire is a great description.
Mm.
I never thought of that before.
But
it is a great description of it. It's unrelenting.
Yeah, it is.
Now, do you take any pain medication or anything, either of you?
I used to take pain medicine when I was younger. But as I got older, I was able to wean myself off. And the thing about pain medicine is it messes some with your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes you tired. You can't remember things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I didn't want to do that going to college and being young. So I was able to get myself off of all pain medicine and don't take anything for it.
Good for you.
Good for you. I'm going to bring my next guest on, and we're going to meet him. It's Dr. Brian Hainline, and he's the Chief of Neurology and Integrative Pain Medicine at ProHealth Care Associates in Lake Success, New York, and Clinical Associate Professor of Neurology at New York University School of Medicine.
Awesome.
He has developed a comprehensive multidisciplinary pain center that embraces a rigorous scientific approach with compassionate, holistic medicine. And he also wrote a book, Back Pain Understood, A Cutting-Edge Approach to Healing Your Back. And I'm going to have Dr. Hainline come on my show in June and talk about his book. But tonight, I wanted him to address the two of you. So welcome, Dr. Hainline.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Hello, doctor.
Have you heard these two ladies speaking? What went through your mind?
Well, the first thing, and when I was hearing Marla speak and the frustrations of being in excruciating pain and not necessarily having a diagnosis right away, and it's something I see all the time because for whatever reason, and there are different reasons, complex regional pain syndrome isn't that well acknowledged in the medical community. It's not discussed still to this day that much in medical school. And what often happens is someone has an injury, and you know it might not be a major injury, mm-hmm. and then the patient develops just excruciating pain. And the doctor looks and says, well, you know, your x-ray is fine or your MRI is fine, and the implication is there's something wrong with you, but it's not in your foot or not in your hand or wherever the pain is. And so you have a tremendous sense of not being validated.
Mm-hmm. Right,
You know, so that's one part of it. And the other is in hearing Melissa, you know, as a teenager growing up with severe pain, I mean, anyone growing up with pain, it's tough, but as a teenager, you know, it's such a critical time of your life, and you know, you're in high school and struggling with pain, and all of your other friends are running around, and you know that's another part of the toll of the condition, because
the emotional,
it's very tough to
absolutely
to go
it
through
is.
That.
Now, tell me, is this disease? Would you say it's immune related?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it has a lot of different sides to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone states that it's a primary autoimmune condition,
mm-hmm.
but which means that for certain conditions like rheumatoid arthritis or multiple sclerosis, the immune system, the primary problem is that the immune system is attacking part of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
But with complex regional pain syndrome, there are well-described autoimmune conditions or autoimmune-like conditions that can develop.
Right.
And the question is that because of the complex regional pain syndrome itself or because the body has become weakened and susceptible as a result of that syndrome? So that's sort of how we're looking at it these days.
Yeah. Did either of you get cellulitis?
You mean hail damage?
No.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
The skin infection.
No.
I did get the lesions
though.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I never had any problems with that.
Okay. So Dr. Hainline, in your approach then to pain, like, do you think that the cells replicate with the memory of pain?
I think what. Replication's a funny word. I think where the literature and the science is taking us, and you know, there's an evolving medicine which we might call mind-body medicine, which
right.
is not at all mind over matter, because
right.
that's more of a punitive type of medicine. You know,
imaginal self.
You know, if you can't get better, then you must really want this. That's what
right.
mind over
right.
matter is. But in mind-body medicine, and we now have the ability to look into the brain from what we call functional brain imaging studies,
mm-hmm.
and you see that there's a circuitry in the brain which plays itself over and over again, and so you know that's a circuitry that is in many pain conditions. We mm-hmm. broadly speaking call them neuropathic pain, and complex regional pain syndrome is one of those, and so there develops a certain memory, and it's not just in the brain, but the memory actually will play itself out in the affected part of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And
so is it like a muscle memory in a way?
Absolutely like a muscle memory.
Okay.
And you know, the body can hold trauma as well. That's a memory, and the body's response to trauma. And that's, honestly, that's a part of medicine we don't understand very well, because it takes a tremendous amount of, to understand that, you have to understand the patient.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And to understand the patient, it means you have to take time. Mm-hmm.
And
that's not
doctors
how our
don't
health
have
system
time.
Works.
That's right. There you go. You bingo. You hit the nail on the head there. So, I mean, Marla suffers from you know, a sore back as part of her MS. What is there something that you could recommend for her or Melissa's pain, her poker-like pain?
Well, you know, a problem
obviously,
is,
you know, they're not your patient. And
a problem
you don't know
is in blanket recommendations, and
sure.
Because sometimes, let's say, I think you mentioned back pain.
Mm-hmm.
With the MS and sometimes the most horrendous pain can actually be because the very deepest layer of rotator muscles have become so maladapted that they no longer support the body.
Yep.
And you can do all the surgery and wear all the braces, but if you don't specifically address those muscles, mm-hmm. you'll never take care of the pain. And for someone else, it might be because they, you know, because of their osteoporosis, they have a collapsed vertebrae and they never adapted posturally after that, and
mm-hmm.
for someone else it might really be from a disc, although that often is not the case. And mm-hmm. so you try to understand, you know, the function of the individual, and so that takes time with taking a history, and it takes a very careful examination as well.
Yeah.
For the poker
knife. Now, the insert that Marla had, is that cutting edge? Is there something newer than that now?
The spinal cord stimulator?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's been around for quite some time, actually. I think what's evolved in that is that the technology.
Is that like a pin, kind of, but inside?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the best way to think of it is, you know, a lot of people are familiar with pacemakers for the heart.
Right.
And so you have a little battery pack under the skin, and a wire goes to the heart and will pace it.
Right.
Well, a spinal cord stimulator is a battery pack which is in the abdomen, and the wires will actually pace the spinal cord. And,
okay,
and
mine's in my derriere, my battery pack.
Is where?
In my rear.
Oh, so that's there. It can go in a couple of places, and you know, it's just so
you
that
get to
you
choose.
Can... I don't know.
But the idea is, if you pace the spine, that you hope to override the pain signals that are coming through the spine.
Did either of you use the capsaicin cream? Outward,
no.
the topical pepper.
Mm, no, I never did use it.
No.
I did, and it made mine so much worse.
Did it?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I had heard
really
horror
did.
Stories about it, but I hadn't ventured into that one.
I did. I used it back when I was younger. I guess I was probably 16, and I remember every day at a certain time in school, I would just think my skin was about to—I mean, it was lit on fire.
Mm.
And finally, I figured out it was because I was using the capsaicin, and once
wow.
I quit, it helped diminish it a lot.
Wow, and you're already on fire. You don't need it added.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Now, you know, I said at the beginning of the show, Dr. Halen, that there's at least 8 million people. You would think with 8 million people, that's not a needle in a haystack. So that's a significant number of people, isn't it?
I would
for
say
medical
so.
To pay attention to?
It's definitely a significant number.
So I guess the question is, why wouldn't doctors know? What maybe it's not taught in medical school, but why isn't it? They should update, don't they? And what makes it so difficult to diagnose? I mean, it looks like, you know, there was a purple hue to her skin. There was a lot of pain. It was after a break. I mean, those are kind of clues, aren't they?
Well, there's the first question you asked, which is the key one. If you look at the curriculum of medical schools and the amount of time that's devoted to pain medicine right now,
yeah, I know.
It's very little.
Very, very
little. So what happens is you learn about, you know, sort of classic pain disorders, and you might learn a little bit about the pharmacology of treating pain,
mm-hmm.
but you don't come anywhere near treating not just complex regional pain syndrome, but all sorts of neuropathic pain conditions, and there are a large number of them. I mean,
I'm curious about your I'm in Canada, and in Canada the OMA states that the only thing a doctor doesn't have to treat, the only thing, is pain. They do not have to give you pain medication, narcotic, let's say, for pain.
Right.
Is that similar in the United States?
Well, what's happened is there's an evolving field of pain medicine, and a lot of internists now, and even neurologists for that matter, are refusing to treat patients with pain, and they will send them to pain medicine physicians.
Okay.
There's one reason for that, a big reason, and it's a very sad one, and that's the number one drug of abuse among high school
sure.
and college kids now are prescription narcotics.
Right, yeah,
and
I get that.
There
I
are a number
that.
Of pain centers that are cropping up where you go in, you pay $200, and 5 minutes later you have a prescription, and that,
right.
that just gives a bad name to, you know, the field and to physicians and to people who are suffering legitimately.
I know, and there's so many people, you know, who I've had shows where they've called in about pain, and they can't get medication because the doctors are, you know, I'm afraid of you know, creating addicts, and
yeah.
and I don't think you create addicts. I think you create dependents, but not addicts. And
I agree completely.
Yeah.
Addiction is from the individual, and
right.
You know,
right.
You don't create an addict from a pain medicine or an opiate medicine any more than you create an alcoholic when you offer someone a glass of wine.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So I think it, you know, that distinction needs to be taught. The other thing, you know, I don't know if you know this, you probably do, Marla. I don't know if you do though, but because I did a lot of work with a pain doctor, and 10% of the population doesn't convert, let's say, a Tylenol 3 into pain medication. So
mm-hmm.
to them, it's like taking nothing.
Exactly.
And so they might go back to their doctor and say, hey, you know, this I don't, there's nothing here. And the doctor says, oh, you just want something stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. Their body doesn't convert it. So that's something that a lot of doctors don't know.
Right.
And that's something that is really, really heart aching for all of us that have any kind of a chronic pain or chronic illness, where it's a needful thing at some times, you know, to
yeah.
a lot of people. And you're right, there's a lot of people that it doesn't do anything. It's like taking baby aspirin. It does nothing. And
you talked about the McGill study, and, you
mm-hmm.
know, there was a lawyer out of McGill University who had written part in a pain book, and she was going to go after that legislation about the pain medication because she felt that there was a lot of suicides among pain sufferers that weren't acknowledged,
yes,
that they just couldn't take the pain anymore.
Yeah, you get very, very frustrated. And a lot of people don't have the support of their friends or family.
Right.
You know, they get tired of hearing about the complaining. They get tired of watching them just lay around and do nothing. They get tired of everything. And so you're dealing with it on your own, and you're already low, low, low as it is. And depression sets in, and if you have no support system whatsoever, yeah, you're just gonna want to end it because you can't take it anymore. You just don't know how to take it.
Yeah. What do you see that, Dr. Hanlon, in families? The caregiver just wants to give up. Can't you make them better? You know, I just want this to go away. They get frustrated and maybe even leave that individual.
I think it's a tremendous problem. And what one of the things that we do at our center is you know, we have group classes. And
mm-hmm.
and they're not chat groups or support groups; they're therapeutic groups. And
mm-hmm.
and so the you know, on the one hand, the patients learn different tools, and
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, you work with the families because they don't understand. And Marla's right. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, you can be with you know, your loved one, but after a while, they just tune out and they don't want to hear about you complaining of pain every day, and then you
right.
feel even more alone. So. It's a tremendous educational effort that has to take place, and,
mm-hmm.
and honestly, I think that's the physician's responsibility. That's part of taking care of the patient, because that's an essential part of how they're going to heal.
You know, I had a pain doctor that I went to, and I think he's absolutely wonderful, and he's an elderly gentleman, and he put together a support group for physicians. He wanted to teach them about pain, and nobody wanted to show up.
Huh.
Is it that unimportant to them, do you think, these physicians, to know about pain, to understand pain in their practice, that they don't care to learn anything about it? Why would,
you know,
I've tried to come up with the right adjective. I don't know if it's unimportant, but
it's not priority.
At the end of the day, I think
yeah.
that might be the right word, but it's terribly frustrating for physicians who don't understand pain to hear their patients complain of pain because they don't know, you know, you have to work with it on a multifaceted level because, you know, the way we learn is you take an X-ray of something or an MRI and you treat it, you know, and you, but the pain is, it's physical, but when someone's really suffering, it's emotional and mental and spiritual in terms of how they, you know, define their meaning in life and to, again, you have to be incredibly empathetic and take time and have a system in place. And if you don't, you get frustrated and then you don't want to deal with it. And then it becomes unimportant because of that.
Yeah. I think, Marla, you hit it on the head when you talk about, and you, Dr. Hingman, when you talk about validation. Mm-hmm. Even that, even just saying, the doctor just saying to you, I know that you're in pain. I know you're not imagining this. Even though we can't see it, you know, we can't feel it. You've got
it.
Something.
Just acknowledge it.
Yeah, just acknowledge it, and the patient can go away. Okay, I'm not crazy.
Exactly.
I do have pain. And what about that thermography now? Does that pick, that picks it up, doesn't it? The region, the pain region, or the sensitivity? I saw something on that.
Well, thermography can. I don't think it's any better than what you can do with looking and feeling and touching. You know,
okay.
it's a way of quantifying temperature changes, but it doesn't.
But Marla, you said that one way to diagnose the RSD is with an X-ray. What can an X-ray show?
X-rays will show where the RSD is starting to deplete the bone, and it has like a little mask over the bone itself. It's like the bone is supposed to be white, and there's like this gray area.
Okay. Yeah. So it's showing a deterioration in the bone. But that could be with a lot of diseases, can't it?
It's called a demineralization, so you lose the normal mineral pattern in it.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen with disuse, and usually the people with the best thing to prevent that in someone with RSD is even if it's painful, you have to continue to use the limb.
Yes, you do have to use it.
But you are right. It can happen with a lot of conditions.
Yeah.
Alyssa, you're walking on yours, right?
I'm sorry?
I said you said that you're walking on your leg, and even though it's purple, and you still use it. And is it strong? Can you stand on that leg, on one leg?
For maybe 3 or 4 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot weaker than the other leg.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like when you go to put your britches on, you have to lean against the wall.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Time I did a speech in front of the medical community and the Holistic Society there in Abilene, and there was a great deal of physicians and their nurses there, as well as other patients, and I had already decided that I was going to do this demonstration to try and explain how they affect us as patients.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I took a candle, and it was a real nice candle, but I picked the biggest, burliest guy in the audience to be my guinea pig. And he came walking up there, and I handed him the lighter, and he says, "What, you want me to light this candle for you?" And I went, "Oh, just a minute. And then I held up the candle. I was like, "Everybody see this candle? It's a very nice candle. It's pretty. It's smooth. It smells good. It's got this wick that goes straight through the middle that holds it all together with substance. And if it wasn't for this wick, it wouldn't really burn efficiently. Isn't it an amazing thing? And just to look at it, you would never know there was anything wrong with it, would you?" They're like, "No." And I said, "Okay, you can light this. But after you light this candle, I want you to hold your hand over the flame as close to the flame and for as long as you possibly can without taking it away for as long as you possibly can." It's like, okay. So he did it, and he did pretty good, about 3 minutes worth. And,
wow.
Yeah, he did pretty good. And he just jolted it away really, really fast. And he goes, "God, that hurt." I went, "Did it?" And he said, "Yeah, that hurt. I was on that flame. It hurt." I went, "Well, none of us felt it, so... Really? It hurt? Explain it to me."
Oh, wow. That was great.
Yeah.
He finally got it. But he took that candle home, and he said he was going to put it in his office to always remind him that the patients have feelings and to tune into them.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah. I knew there was a way
to get it. Is your staff trained differently, Dr. Hayline? Are they trained to look at the patient in a more holistic way, I'm assuming?
Well, we meet regularly, and I've had the advantage of starting the division alone, and then I've just built it up one person at a time.
Oh,
and,
good.
Um, you know, not everyone has to have every quality, but the most important quality is compassion.
Right.
And you know, and that just goes such a long way in medicine, and you know, and patients feel that, and I think patients with pain particularly feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been brushed aside so often, and it's almost like they know that the physician can't wait until they leave because, you know, he or she doesn't want to deal with it. So it means so much, and I think it's an important part of how people get better, because then they start, it's not just trusting you. The most important thing is they trust themselves, and they trust that they may have resources that they didn't believe in before. And that, you know, that's a part of medicine as well. It's not just
absolutely
medicine.
Yeah, you to know. Learn to trust their instincts and know their body. Their body talks to them. It's like a big bioprocessor. And when you have pain somewhere, your body's telling you something. And
the beauty of it is that over the years, I think with a certain openness, and when people are all working together, you understand your body better over time and what you thought it meant at one point in time, and that's where you were at, you know, a little later on, you understand it means something else, and it's like a journey. I mean, when you're working with someone who in chronic pain, it's you're taking a journey with them to try to help them.
Well, let me ask you, Doctor.
Sorry, go ahead, Marla.
Let me ask you something, Doctor. If one of your patients comes in with, because you don't see them like every week, you see them maybe every 6 weeks or 8 weeks, right? So if they come in with a diary that details every day and has pictures to show differences in, you know, the affected area, would you be more apt to pay attention to that person who logged everything, who took detail information and took the time to bring it to you, to share it with you, or would you take more interest in the one that just came in and griped about it all?
I don't think I can answer that one way or the other, because the way I really understand it, I think more than anything, is by being in the room and letting the person know that this is like their time, and I look in their eyes and they speak and I listen, and sometimes they'll show me the diary and I'll say, well, can you tell me what's the most important thing in that diary?
Mm-hmm.
And that will sort of crystallize the moment for me, because, you know, some people just are unable to mm-hmm. diary, and I understand that. And so
Couldn't do it, Marla. I had a diary. I've been doing it for 7 years, and I couldn't do it because it forced me to think about my pain, and I didn't want to think about my pain.
Oh, wow.
Now, and I've had patients come in with, like, you know, 50 pages, and then they start reading it to me, and I say, whoa, you know, I mean, let's step back, and I'm very interested in this. But, yeah, everyone, you have to, the bottom line is we have to establish a working relationship, and so the diary helps, fine, but
are
it's
you
not,
located? I want you as my doctor.
It's not critical. You know?
Yeah. Well, they're asking in the chat room here, Dr. Hayline, if you have clones. and you know, I tend to think that many doctors who work allopathic and integrative medicine, they do tend to have a more compassionate, holistic approach to things.
They do.
Don't you find with your colleagues?
Oh, definitely. And you know, and the nice thing is I love coming to work because I love being with my colleagues, and I know we're all in this together, and we round, you know, we discuss our patients, you know, we have regular group meetings, and everyone's there for the same reason, you know, how do we help this person?
Right.
You know, but sometimes, you know, patients fool us too. I mean, it's I wish we're all sweet and rosy. It's not always sweet and rosy, but that's, you know, That's part of the game too. We're all in this to do the best we can, and sometimes we're fooled.
So in your experience, let's take Melissa for a moment, who had hers at 13, and Marla, who I think you got yours in your 40s, Marla.
Uh-huh, I was 42.
42. Will things change for Melissa? Do you think? Do you know? Down the line, does it get worse? Does it get better? Does it stay the same? What can she expect? Or is it just, is there any ideas?
I have a lot of ideas. I've worked with so many patients with RSD, And I have seen people who have had it for years and years, and then something becomes transformative in their lives. And I don't know, you don't know what it is, but there's just a different sort of understanding that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the condition improve after many years.
Yep.
I've seen people who have gone into, you know, what we might call
remission,
and then it can come back 5 years later. And I've seen people who have been stable for years, and then something else happens and they worsen. But the one thing I'm certain of, because I've witnessed it so many times, is that this can become transformed even years later. And so I would tell Melissa that you know there's the reality of working with it and doing what's necessary and making sure that your team support is right, and there's the hope that things can get better, and it's a practical, realistic hope. It's not something that, you know, is just somewhere out in outer space and doesn't really apply to daily living.
Yeah. You know, I had the honor and privilege, really, of interviewing Dr. Bruce Lipton, who is one of the eminent cellular biologists in the world.
Oh.
And he talks about imaginal cells in our body and how you can cure anything, you know, with
mm-hmm.
your mind and cells. It's pretty incredible. You just have to be able to do it.
Exactly. And
yeah.
I didn't discover I could until after I went into remission. And then I had a dental appointment that set me into like an overly movable Parkinson's, severely Parkinson's patient, you know.
Well, you know what? Because that happens to me too. Like when I go for dental work, I get cellulitis on a scar site because I broke every bone, you know, below my waist.
Yeah.
So that's what happens to me. That's my trigger, my immune, response trigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, like they can't believe it, but that's what happens. I used to get it when I got blood taken.
Yeah, you feel like every nerve from the tip of your toes coming all the way up to the rescue of the nerves that just got numbed or just got stuck.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah. Crazy.
But so that's what made me think it was immune related, you know, somehow. Is it
it's a physiological expression and our body's physiology affects our immune system. So I think for some people that pathway becomes ingrained and so it does make some sense what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense.
And do you find that the pain is sympathetic, so it's both sides like arthritis? Does it, you know, do the lesions hit both sides of your body?
Do I believe that both sides?
No, to the girls, like you said, that you have, Marla, I think you have lesions.
Yeah, I get the RSV lesions.
And so does it go to both sides of your body?
Oh, yeah.
Are they identical, like arthritis would be?
It just depends on what's going on. A lot of times when I get the lesions, I've been overactive or overstressed, doing too much.
But if you get it on the left side, you're going to get it on the right side?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yep, you're going to get them.
There's so many clues.
I get them on the face.
Because I don't think anybody's curious enough to dig into, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a fascinating phenomenon, and it has a name that we call mirror image pain.
Yeah,
right.
And the frontier work of that really is with the functional brain mapping, because it makes sense when you see what's really going on in the brain, because this isn't just like a simple pain pathway. It's so interlinked with so many other pathways of the nervous system, and that's why there's not just a simple remedy. And it's even it's kind of interesting if you look at the functional brain imaging studies. Some of the pathways are similar to pathways that you would see in someone with chronic post-traumatic stress disorder too, which is part of a physiologic expression. And
well, there was a trauma. We've got like 1 minute remaining. Caller who was on 713, I'm sorry I couldn't get to your call because we're going to be out of time in just a second. So let me thank you, Melissa, so much for coming on and joining us. And Dr. Hainlein, thank you very much. You've really added, both of you have added so much to the show. And Marla, of course, you're brilliant and just so courageous, and I so admire your outlook and your spirit.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you, Melissa and Dr. Hainlein. I appreciate all of y'all's information, too. Every little bit helps.
Thank you, everyone.
And thank you for allowing me to come on.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for bringing some awareness.
There you go. Thanks for bringing awareness. Yeah, Melissa, you know, congratulations again on your Emmy. Wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely. Could you get me on Oprah?
I could try.
Yay!
You'll have to become your own Oprah these days, I think.
I know.
And, okay, everybody, thanks again. And Chris, if you're still listening, thanks for calling in too and supporting your friend there. Area 713, I'm sorry we're out of time. I'd love to have taken your call. You can write to me, frankie@missionunstoppable.com, if you'd like, and I can get you in touch with Marla. Okay, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Progressive presents Get Pumped, inspiration to help you do insurance stuff.
Okay, time out. You're going to let your budget be the boss of you? Take control with Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay for car insurance, and we'll help you find options that fit your budget. Here's some music to get you pumped. Da-dong-da-dong-da-dong-da-dong-dang-dang. I hear your budget laughing at you. Oh, wait, that's just those kids laughing at me. Ignore them!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Houston. For a limited time at VisionWorks, you can get two complete pairs of glasses. Frames, lenses, the works for just $49 on single vision glasses and $89 on progressives. And that's a good deal. But we offer that pricing on over 500 frames, which makes it a great deal. Right now, buy two complete pairs of single vision glasses for just $49 or two pairs of progressives for only $89. VisionWorks, we're here to help you. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Offer expires November 10th.